Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Well, good morning, New Jersey. It is Thursday, October the 22nd, 2020. I'm Bob Williams. Welcome to the Jim Gerhardt Podcast. I'm just settling into the big broadcast chair over there at Stately Gerhardt Manor is our host, Jim Gerhardt. Good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning. Good morning. It is a foggy day here in London town, but this is an anniversary. I just happened to notice this. Did you realize this is rather a big anniversary in New Jersey, which leading up to a bigger anniversary, it was on this day, October 22nd in 2012, that a hurricane hit the Bahamas and Bermuda and the Antilles and started up the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Now, can you guess what the name of that hurricane was?
Well, 2012, Sandy.
Sandy. And it came up the coast. Then it was downgraded to a tropical storm. Then it picked up in the biggest storm anybody'd ever thought of. But it started, it came into view, really, in its formation and started our way. It began the journey of devastation on the 22nd. That was, what, 8 years ago today. Of course, it hit the 28th, I guess it was the 29th through the 2nd of November.
Right, took about a week for it to hit us,
If you stop and think about it, it hit the fan on the 2nd of November. But the devastation was between the 29th, the 30th, and then we have an election this year on the 3rd. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of symbolic of this great conflagration coming up and hitting right at about what is election day today.
Yep.
So I think there's something, maybe a parallel there, because nobody knows what's going to happen when this eventually hits.
Well,
so that's something that we can remember. I want to do more on that later. We go get onto other things, but it was very interesting in the course of the Sandy storm, the career of Governor Chris Christie and his political future. And it shows how quickly a political figure in this country can go from being cock of the walk to the goat.
Mm-hmm.
And over how little it takes. And maybe there's something there to that would be a parallel to our national situation. Speaking of which, tonight,
right,
two big games. We get the on television. Now, New Jersey people are going to have to make a choice here. And so we have the Giants and the Eagles. Right. I mispronounced that. I said Giants and Eagles. It's actually Giants.
Eagles. Yeah.
The beloved Eagles. But even though, and of course, the other game going on at the same time on television, competing with it, will be Trump versus Biden.
Right, the other game. That's now, a thing. Yeah.
Here, speaking of parallels, I'm loaded with parallels today. Think of this as a parallel. Here we have two of the worst possible teams in all of football.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say the other part of it here. But speaking of the candidates, but there may be a parallel there. I don't think you had asked me earlier, the fact that they have such poor records, does it matter? Not to New Jersey people, I think, or to some South Philadelphia. Very few people are going to even know there is a presidential debate.
Yeah.
In South Jersey. But you get the Giants fan and the Eagles fans. It doesn't matter how bad they are.
Right.
They're ours. They're our Giants and Eagles.
Well, tonight's game is apparently going to put one. Yeah, one's going to still stay alive in the playoff hunt. The other one's going to be jumping off into the great abyss for the rest of the year. So tonight's going to be a pretty big game there anyway.
I don't know, unless they both lose.
Right, or unless they tie. Yeah, right, that'll just do it.
I want to make a suggestion for the committee that puts on the debates. Here is what I would like to see. After every great flatulence of oratory that the candidates do at the end, which is probably when they run out of breath, as we saw before, they have to walk over, look straight into the camera and say, psych. I think that would, because that's pretty much what's going down.
Now, what do you think? What do you think of the rule for tonight with the mute button that's going to prohibit or keep the candidate from interrupting the other candidate while it's his turn to speak? Because that's what I think frustrated a lot of people in the first debate, that both candidates were just shush up and let the other guy talk.
Well, who has the mute button will be held by what, the moderator?
I believe so, yes.
Who is in league with the Democratic candidate, of course, or else the person would not have had the job very long if they had not been very partisan. That's part of the career now. Part of the job description is to hate Trump if you're in journalism. So it'd be interesting to see how that works. I was reading a story that the president's advisors have been very forceful and strong and united in urging him to not be so bellicose in this thing, not be so aggressive, not to come on like a pit bull. But the question was asked, is he capable of it, even if he agrees?
Right.
Does he have it in him? I would be very interested to see. I would think possibly not. What I will probably do is tape it and enjoy the football game.
That's a good idea.
And then if words leaks out that anything interesting had happened that I hadn't heard before, I have a tape to back it up. So when one of the candidates gets all worked up in a fit of apoplexy and explodes or falls off the stage or something, I get to watch it. I get to see that leak.
Well, apparently on paper, the way the mute button is supposed to work, I believe there's not going to be any interruptions when the candidates are asked the initial question by the moderator, that they're going to get their 2 minutes uninterrupted time to respond. However, they're going to respond, if they're going to dodge the question or address the topic at hand head on, they're going to get 2 minutes uninterrupted. And then after the back and forth there, then I think it's a free for all where they can interrupt and then they can go back and forth at each
but
other.
That really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because what happened before, during the original 2 minute presentations on these various subjects, the other person kept jumping in anyway. How do you stop that?
No, but that's where I think that they're going to use the mute button, that the person cannot interrupt while the other person is speaking initially. And then after, when they go back and forth and the tit for tat type thing, that's when it's both mics will be on. That's what I understand anyway.
Well, I have an idea. I noticed noticed Manfred, my Adobe, was up a little earlier here when we were talking. And Manfred has a collar on, one of these shock collars, which we don't use to shock them. But it could be done, but you use it because you get a vibration or you get something to get the dog's attention. Put a shock collar, go to Chewy.com, get a couple of shock collars and put on these people.
Yeah, that'll stop them real fast. Who needs a mute button then?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this. You don't have to worry about the media, because the media already has their reviews written, I'm sure. Right. Uh-huh. Saying that now the vice president had just kicked the bedickens out of Trump. So that's all a foregone conclusion. That is one of the great shames, to be serious for a moment, is the fact that here we get into one of the great crises in our national history, hugely important to people, and yet we have no way of getting a true presentation, reporting, or evaluation of events and what's going on. Everything is coming from either side with a very partisan agenda. So you don't know exactly what truth is. Truth has become completely irrelevant in politics. Oh, another thing, I noticed, I think Benjamin Harrison was the 31st president. No, we'll go back beyond that. Whatever it was, it doesn't matter. Benjamin Harrison, I know, only held office of president for 31 days.
Right. Remember that? He had gotten pneumonia, right? He's the one that spoke
at the inauguration.
Yeah.
And it was bad weather and they were doing it outdoors. And he got pneumonia and he died 31 days in office. And I can't help but wonder, and certainly pray, nothing something that dire. But you wonder if the Democratic Party candidate will last that long at the source of power.
Right.
How long it will take him to be usurped by the actual controlling ideology of his party right now.
Right.
And then what that will mean. What that will mean.
Right.
And there's one matter that came up, and I haven't heard a lot about it, but I do have heard it, that the Democrats are proposing, what do they call it, a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've got my doubts about that one.
Yeah, well, what this is, and this is very common, you notice they did it in the Maoist days in China, the Stalinist days, in which everybody who had somehow had any favorable glance at the opposition, which would be Trump in this time, gets hauled in for, and you either have to recant and damn the former president, or you're assigned some kind of penance. Now, back with those two that I mentioned, the result could be dire.
Right.
Anybody who had had an un-PC thought is gone, is a goner. And then, of course, they sort of leavened it down to the gulags.
Right.
That if you not agree with the party line of your party, then you were declared mentally incompetent, mentally compromised, and sent off to a, quote, rehab institution. Like the Chinese now are sending the Muslims in Western China off for, quote, re-education.
Right.
But I would not be surprised to see some form of, quote, re-education. See, right now, one of the big things has been this sensitivity training,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a warm-up for that sort of a thing, which is actually a form of, if you want, you stretch it a little bit, but you say it's a form of brainwashing because it's trying to change your neural pathways that have been formed in your brain so that you think like they do instead of thinking like you do or did.
Right.
So a lot of interesting things to watch that we will find out after the inauguration. If there's an inauguration, see, that's still up in the air, too.
Right. Now, I wanted to mention about, you had mentioned that it's quite possible that if Joe Biden is elected, that he would step down for health reasons or whatever, not soon after his inauguration. But, you know, I was also thinking with all of the controversy and the breaking stories this week about his son, and the improprieties that he had with, the foreign governments and things like that, and how Joe Biden maybe have played into that. And this is all just breaking stories now, that maybe this also gives the Democrats another out to get him out of office, that he may have to step down because of previous improprieties as holding the office of the vice president. I was just thinking that over the last day or so.
It's very possible. On the other hand, you see how hard it was to prosecute Clinton for his obscene behavior in the Oval Office. It's very hard to do. Now, Nixon resigned when he came under fire. I would see Biden more not as getting involved in something later because there's so much going on that members of the Democratic Party, if they win, that their party could be held accountable for. This whole 4 years of trying to undermine the presidency.
Right.
And all of these things, the Russian bit, all of this is going on. I think it's going to go away, all of it, if the Democrats come into office. This will be the last you'll hear of that, which to me is a great disappointment, because I'd love to know what went on, just as a matter of curiosity. But we'll never know. And I think the same thing with the Biden thing. It'll be hushed up. I think the president, it will probably not be like a coup, of course.
Right.
But it will be that the president will have to turn over. Maybe it'll start incrementally. With this duty and that duty and then more and more duties to the vice president. And then he will ultimately have to, for reasons of health, he will have to rest or sort of get out of it. And therefore, legally, you can put the vice president into office.
And it's amazing. It's amazing that the campaigns are going down to the wire with this possibility hanging over their heads. Why would you even consider putting a candidate in who could be compromised with health? You don't know for sure, but it certainly looks like a real possibility. That why would afterward is what happens after the person is in, but knowing going in that the person may have some issues, why would you consider even electing that person if they're not healthy or capable at this point?
the Democratic leadership had gone so far to the left, it was getting dangerous for them because the American people don't really go for that. And so they had to come up with a prominent, well-known Democrat who would probably not offend anybody. Just, almost a cardboard cutout, if you want, of a presidential candidate.
Yeah, but why would you?
And to come on as the moderate. And so the message is, okay, so we got a lot of people with a lot of these ideas that are maybe kind of radical. But actually, here is the real picture of who we are. Well, we know that's not the case, but I think that was the plan. So another thing that's really kind of bothersome here, all this mail-in balloting, and we're told that right now 30 million people, probably by now 40 million people have already voted.
Yeah, isn't that nuts? That's crazy.
This debate is moot, you know, for that many people. 126, I think it was, million people voted in the 2016 election.
Right.
And you take like 40 or 50% of that vote is going to be mail-in. On the other hand, though, is this the end of the secret ballot? See, that was one of our guarantees, that we could not, nobody could really come back with retaliation.
And know who you were, who you're voting for.
Because it was supposed to be a secret ballot. Even in the machine, they'd have to go to a lot of trouble to figure out how you voted. I mean, it could be done, but I don't know that that has been tried. With a mail-in ballot, you sign it.
Yeah.
It's sitting right there with your signature under your address. And everything.
Yeah, it's like your tax return.
Yeah. And so it is, in a sense, public, or even if it's considered to be private information, there's no way to guarantee that. And so if we do have this reconciliation program going on, they'll have no trouble finding out who voted for Trump. Now, is that going to affect my livelihood? Is that going to affect my reputation? My safety, even my standing in the neighborhood. We've never gotten to this extreme before. So it's just very, very difficult to figure out.
Well, I can imagine a lot of people are going to be speaking with their financial advisors over the next week or so, if they have not, and asking them, what kind of game plan should I have if things, because I'm sure a lot of people cannot afford a major drop in their retirements and their investments right now. And if big tech and all the big companies start to pull out, there goes, you know, they're pulling the carpet out from under you.
This gets back to a question that I've been asking myself and asking everybody else. Why would the lords of capitalism in this country, the Wall Street, if you want, the economic barons, the internet and all
the money.
Most powerful people in the world, why would they support a socialist government? Because basically, fundamental to socialism is that there is an end to public or to private ownership of property and to these big corporations. Everything would be nationalized. Why are they doing it? Then it occurred to me, my thought, my theory. I think there's a deal going on. Nobody sat around in a room and sort of broke this down. Everybody had to sign it and do secret handshakes. But I think what happens is the thing that these organizations fear more than anything else is regulation. The internet giants and the corporate giants, the corporations, the money people. And even get back to the other part of the ruling quartet in this country is the intelligence community, as it's called. I mean, they are all in combination, in cahoots, pushing the Democratic candidate. The Democratic candidates or the people leading the party are pushing socialism. So normally that would be there. So why are the biggest capitalists in the world supporting socialism? Again, it's regulation. I think the understanding is that if we get into power, we are going to go soft on the regulation, which is tough. Now, I don't know that the Republicans are into regulation either. They are not. So I think these big companies have nothing to fear from that, if it's a Republican victory, because things will go on pretty much as they are. But I think they're trying to hedge their bet on any kind of regulation of industry. And another thing that's that at some point, somebody has got to do it's going to be awfully difficult. I don't see this happening with a Republican win, which is one reason that I am not totally enthusiastic about that. Somebody has got to figure out a way for some of this money that's being sucked out of the country, figure out a way for some of it to come back into the circulation in the economy. There's too much money, too much of our wealth is going into too few pockets. Now, that sounds Marxist, but it's not. This is way beyond that. It has nothing to do with it. That was another game in another day where you didn't have a gaggle of million and trillionaires holding all the money and you do corporations. So, and that's one problem that people are having, that people are so upset. The middle class is being pretty much starved of opportunity because all of this wealth is being sucked out. It's like the water is evaporated going up into the clouds, but it doesn't rain anymore.
Right.
So somebody's got to figure out a way to blow a whistle. Yeah. Now, my thought is that what they would do, we could take these people, this handful of people with these super billionaires and trillionaires and the Bezos and, the, you know, whoever else has all this money. Instead of socking it into something that is not circulating in the economy so everybody else has a chance of making some of it, I'd include some probably professional athletes in the woodpile too and other people. But say, okay, I think Jeff Bezos with Amazon is now considered the richest man. Let's say he is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he is right now. Say, okay, Jeff, this is great. You win. We'll give you a hand. We'll give you a parade. You get to keep the yacht that's about twice the size of the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln. And you get to keep all that. You won. Now kick the money back. You get to lead a good life. You have all these luxuries. You have all this and enjoy yourself. And we're going to go back, kick it back. Everybody kick the money back in the pot, except we'll let you all keep enough to live at a high rate and kick it back in so everybody else will have a chance. Bring up the economy. It'll loosen the frustration. It'll lessen the anger among people. And you can have a thriving economy if some of this money went back into it and jobs are available beyond minimum wage. It would be a very good thing for the country. And I think the political parties probably should not quarrel with that. Of course, it's never going to happen because these people wield huge, huge amounts of power and they can forestall anything like that. But it's like a monopoly game. Say, okay, you won. Now, we'll honor you for that. We'll have a hall of fame. Your name will always be up there as an incentive. You are the carrot on the end of the stick for everybody else. But put the money back in circulation.
Right. Couple of New Jersey things with the voting. Have you heard anything more about any improprieties with the voting? I have not heard any more, but I'm hearing Dan Alexander tells us that there's a new lawsuit out being brought by the ACLU of New Jersey and the League of Women Voters Federation there to allow email ballots. Apparently, there's been a couple of cases where someone did not receive their ballot and they're requesting an email, which opens up an entire new subject.
Yeah. Like, they will come to that. I don't know if they're prepared for it right now because of the opportunity. I mean, you could sit over in Odessa or some remote region of Russia and win an election in New Jersey, you know, if everything's on the internet, because the internet's not trustworthy right now.
Right.
It's unfortunate. I think these people have started these big companies, Facebook and everything. I think they started off with very good intention. The technicians who developed this and said, this is wonderful. And I'm sure even the Facebook said, this is going to bring people together. This is what he said. This is why I did it. This is why Zuckerberg, so we can bring people together, let people communicate. We'll have like one world, big family. Then somebody crept in. The devil put this in somebody's ear and says, hey, you got a good thing going here. Let's monetize this baby.
Right.
And that's when the end came, when they turned it into a money-making machine. And I don't know if they can go back right now, but this is just one of those things of good intentions turning into in many regards, a very good conclusion, but in other regards, pretty bad. You're talking about the election. I noticed this. There's a bill in the legislature, at least that I had read, that would prevent police officers from being anywhere around voting venues.
Really?
Yeah, because that is voter suppression. So it's interesting now.
They would be the ones that would be enforcing any sort of electioneering and things like that.
It's maintaining order. It's maintaining order because there are talks now about there being possible demonstrations and problems at polling places. Well, here you've got policemen, but if this bill passes, a policeman, and I have to do it quickly, policemen will not be allowed in the area. And so now stopping any kind of uproar or problem at a voting venue, and I suppose that would extend to anybody inside who is trying to police fraud, that's voter suppression.
Right.
So the voter should be able to do anything they damn well please in there. Yeah. Oh, the other thing is, Bill had this story this morning that I mentioned to you about the survey about New Jersey. Why don't you take that? You just read that story.
Well, it's pretty interesting that there's a survey by YouGov that says New Jersey is the most hated state polled by Americans. And we even beat out Alabama, which is never been a real favorite. But congratulations, New Jersey. Everybody hates us.
We're number one. but you know, New Jersey, out of 50 states, New Jersey, according to that survey, New Jersey is the only state that more people hated than either liked it or didn't pay any attention to it.
It doesn't get into specifics, correct? Are these people that hated that have been here, or have they just read about some of the horror stories? We're not sure about the polling questions.
It's reputation. Reputation.
That's it.
I ran into that once. I went to a high school reunion, you know, a few years ago, and I don't remember what it was. We've been out of high school a long time. But I was the only person there from New Jersey. Many of the people had stayed right around down in the southwest corner of Virginia where I'd gone to high school. And I was a matter of curiosity. They didn't react to me with hate. Because I think many of the people didn't remember who I was. I didn't remember who they were. But, you know, it was years, 50 years later or something. But the fact that I was from New Jersey cast a certain aura about me that seemed to fascinate them. And people you'd find them come kind of around, kind of looking, you know, if you look around, you see people looking at you and then suddenly looking back. Right. And they'd ask questions. I even had somebody ask me, do you know Tony Soprano?
he's my name.
Sure. You know, Tone and I pal around all the time.
Right.
I hang out at the Bottom Bing Club, you know, like everybody in New Jersey does. You have to. But there is a certain, what would you say, aura, mystique, if you want, about New Jersey and other parts of the country that I was surprised at the hate, though. Somebody once told me, we were talking about this on the air, and a caller said that he had driven out west, and he parked his car at a motel somewhere, I don't know, in Arizona, New Mexico, somewhere down in Southern California. On his way, he parked the car in a motel, and all of a sudden outside his room, he parked right outside the room. And all of a sudden, there was this huge commotion and banging out there, and he went out, and here was a guy with a baseball bat beating the dickens out of his car. And he said, what are you doing? He said, there's New Jersey plates.
Go figure, man.
I loved it, though. I thought it was wonderful. The proposed motto one time during a New Jersey tourist motto campaign that was perfect. It wasn't picked. They picked something that said absolutely nothing. But the proposed motto, it came in number four in a voting one time. It says, New Jersey, small state, big attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, I love that.
Love it. Yep.
That's my motto for New Jersey.
That's a good way to end the show. We got a great attitude, big attitude, and get your popcorn tonight. It's going to be a great viewing no matter what you're watching tonight.
Yeah, I love it here. I love it. God bless the state of New Jersey and everybody in it. We love you.
Yeah. Thanks for watching.
We'll pick that up next week.
Yeah. Thanks for watching. We'll catch you next Thursday.
Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.